नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शुभासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम दी 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The chapter is titled as The Most Confidential Knowledge or Rajaguhya Yoga. So last week we started with the 9th chapter. So we covered the first two verses. We will continue with that discussion. I'll do a quick recap of what we have seen. So Srila Krishna says, Idam tute guhyatamam pravakshami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yad gyatva mokshase ashubhat. So, O Arjuna, te pravakshyami, I am going to speak to you because anasuyave, because you are free of envy. And therefore, I am going to speak to you, idam guhyatamam jnanam, this most confidential knowledge, vijnana sahitam, along with realization of me, yad jyatva, knowing which, mokshase ashubhat, you will be freed from suffering. So, here Srila Vishwanatha Thakur writes, the majestic aspect of the Lord as the object of worship, which is suitable for His servants. Understanding the Aishwarya of the Supreme Lord, which is very foundational before we learn about His sweet aspects. So, and the excellence of that devotee is described in this chapter. Bhakti is superior to the process of karma, jnana and yoga. And we saw that this bhakti is of two types, either pradani bhuta bhakti or kevala bhakti. And this guni bhuta bhakti, where bhakti is secondary, is not really bhakti, because bhakti is only, secondary in that practice. Whatever is primary, only it is mentioned in that particular way. So, amongst this Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti and Kevala Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti is superior. It is not dependent on purity. Purity of heart or other elements like Jnana, etc. And this Kevala Bhakti starts with understanding the powers of the Lord, Aishwarya. And then he says that Gita is the essence of all the Upanishads. And the essence of Gita is the middle six chapters. The essence of the middle six chapters are the 9th and 10th chapter. Like that. So in the first three verses of this chapter, the Lord is going to praise the knowledge that He is going to describe in these two chapters, especially. He says, the first six chapters, especially second to sixth, there is description of the Guni Bhuta Bhakti, or where bhakti is gauna or secondary, karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, etc., which can potentially lead to saijya mukti or liberation. That has been described. In the 7th and 8th chapters, pradhani bhuta bhakti was described. So the first 6 chapters is guhya, secret knowledge. 7th and 8th, where there is predominant bhakti, pradhani bhuta bhakti, that is guhya tara, even more secret. And the 9th chapter, which is going to describe about Shuddha Bhakti, that is Guhya Tama knowledge. So, most secret. And this knowledge is Avyayam. Idam tute Guhya Tamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yagyatva mokshase ashubhat. By using the word avyayam, idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyami. Avyayam is not there in this verse, of course. But avyayam, or indestructible, it must, in the second verse, of course, in the second verse, raja vidya raja guhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartum avyayam. So, this knowledge is said to be avyayam or indestructible, Anything which is within the three modes is destructible. Because this knowledge is said to be indestructible, it has to be beyond the three modes, and only Shuddha Bhakti is beyond the three modes. So therefore, what is being described here is Shuddha Bhakti. Okay. And in verse 3, the word dharma means only bhakti. Okay, anyways, because pratyakshavagamam dharmyam in the next verse it says. And I am teaching this secret to you because anasuyave, because you are not hostile or you are not selfish. Which means that this bhakti should be taught only to those who are not inimical or selfish to this subject matter. And I will teach this knowledge of Shuddha Bhakti, which will culminate in realization of me at the stage of Prema. And by understanding this, Mokshase Ashubhat, you will be freed from all obstacles to Bhakti. Then he says, what is the nature of this Bhakti? Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idamuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam, Susukam, Kartum, Avyayam. Seven aspects of this Shuddha Bhakti is mentioned. First is, it is Raja Vidya. So what is Raja Vidya? This is the king of all knowledge. So there are many different kinds of bhakti. Of all different kinds of bhakti, this is the topmost, Shuddha Bhakti. Then Raja Guhyam. This is of all types of bhakti, this is the secret most. Secret most means, unless one has this kind of Sukriti, one cannot understand. That's why we were discussing last time. If it is most secret, it is very clearly mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Everyone can read. If it is so secret, then how can it remain so secret if it is so explicitly mentioned in Bhagavad Gita? Yes, it is explicitly there. But unless one has sufficient Sukriti, one will not be able to understand the subject matter at all. Therefore, it is Rajaguhyam. Okay. And then Pavitram Idam Uttamam. It is the most purifying of all the processes. Even Madhusudan Saraswati says that because it immediately uproots all sinful reactions. Prarabdha, Aprarabdha and all these things. Therefore, it is called as Pavitram Uttamam. The most purifying. And the fourth is pratyakshavagamam. It is directly realizable. Bhakti pareshanubhavo viraktir anyatra chesha trikayeka kala. When one progresses on the path of bhakti, simultaneously one experiences para isha anubhava and virakti. Para isha anubhava means experience of direct experience of the Supreme Lord's hands. You know, one can experience it. And virakti, anyatra virakti, detachment from material things. So therefore, pratyakshavagamam, that we are progressing in bhakti is very directly realizable. That is pratyaksha avagamam. Okay. So, and this realization is constant. Okay. Like that. And then the third, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idamuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam. The fifth aspect is Dharmyam. Anyone who practices bhakti is, one should understand that he is acting according to the path of dharma. Even though he may not properly practice all kinds of dharma or varnashrama dharma. He may fail to perform all dharmas or religious duties, but one should understand that those dharmas are automatically fulfilled just by executing bhakti. Okay. And this is what Narada Muni says. Yata taror mula nishechanena trupyanti tatskanda bujopa shaka. Pranopaharacha etendriyanam tataiva sarvarhanam achyuta ijya. All other kinds of worship or dharma is automatically accomplished when one practices bhakti. So if one takes up the practice of bhakti, one need not separately perform the other kinds of dharma. And then the sixth aspect is susukam kartum. It's very easy to execute. There are no extreme pains in the body, voice or mind because of renunciation of senses. Because bhakti involves engagement of senses. Non-engagement of senses for a conditioned soul is most difficult. Because we have accumulated vasanas, unlimited vasanas, because of living in this material world for millions of lifetimes. And these vasanas will naturally push one to engage their senses in a particular way. Sadrisham cheshtate svasyaha prakritir jnanavanapi. Prakritim yanti bhutani nigrahakyam karishyati. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita automatically one is forced to act according to the vasanas one has accumulated over many, many lifetimes. And bhakti allows engagement of senses in the sense objects. But the other practices of jnana and yoga talk about refrainment. Refrainment of the senses from the sense objects. So which is very, very difficult. Refraining the senses from the sense objects. Okay. So therefore, there is ample scope for dovetailing. So therefore, it is not a problem. And then avyayam. Avyayam means eternal. Bhakti is eternal. Karma, jnana, etc. They are given up at some stage. Whereas bhakti is practiced during sadhana and at the stage of perfection also. At the stage of perfection, as we saw the other day, it becomes it becomes anubhava, a natural byproduct of one's attaining prema. And at the stage of sadhana, it is practiced as a sadhana in order to attain perfection. Okay, like that. So these are the seven characteristics of pure devotional service. So these are the first two verses of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So this is where we ended our discussion last time. Before we continue this discussion further, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add based on whatever we have discussed, summarized today or whatever we discussed last week, we can take it right now. Yes, Shiva Kumar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, Dhanda Prams Prabhu. Yes. One question. When we understand that the bhakti is nirguna, above the three modes, my understanding, Prabhu, is that some level of rajo and sattva is used in terms of studying the scriptures, understanding it, you know, using the intelligence, analytical skills, taking notes, creating some insight, perspective of our own and things like that, Prabhu. Just correct me if I'm wrong. If that understanding is correct, I feel that employment of the gunas also creates its expectation of attachment to the results and things like that, Prabhu. So kind of how do we look at this situation, Prabhu?
Well, bhakti itself is beyond the three gunas. Shuddha bhakti is beyond three gunas. The practitioner's swabhava may have three gunas. But a practitioner is defined based on his faith and not his swabhava, his conditioning. So there are two things. One is faith or conviction, which is called as Shraddha. Shraddha, Shra means heart, Dha means to give. Shraddha means that for which you are willing to give your heart. But our conditioning is that which distracts us from giving our heart to that particular thing. So there are two things. One is our conditioning, another is our heart or our faith. Okay. And a practitioner is defined based on his faith and not his conditioning. Shraddhamayoyam purushaha yoyat shraddha sayevasaha. In the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Shraddhamayoyam purushaha yoyat shraddha sayevasaha. A person is defined based on the faith that he possesses.
Okay.
So, faith in pure devotional service is beyond the three modes. So, therefore, a devotee is said to be beyond the three modes because his faith is beyond three modes. Even though he may be conditioned by the three modes. His swabhava may possess the three modes. So what does faith, so for a person, when a sadhaka or any practitioner, when they act, you get the impetus for action comes from two things. One is their faith. Another is their conditioning. So, every day morning we wish to wake up, that impetus to wake up and chant, that impetus is coming from the force of our faith, which is beyond three modes. But as soon as the alarm rings, we may sometimes tend to switch off the alarm and tend to sleep for a little longer. That impetus to push us to sleep a little longer, that pushing is coming from our tamoguni conditioning. Okay. But that tamoguni conditioning does not define the person. The person is defined by his faith, and that faith is beyond three modes. So even though our conditioning, which is within three modes, may actually sometimes become an obstacle to executing actions according to our faith. We wish to chant attentively. That desire is coming from our faith. But sometimes we are distracted by our plan making and all that. That is due to rajogun. Sometimes we feel lethargic and sleepy. That is due to the tamogun, which is all within our swabhava. So, therefore, when we say bhakti is beyond the three modes, what it means is a person who possesses faith in pure devotional practices, he is beyond three modes. His faith is beyond three modes. Even though he may have a conditioning which is still within the three modes.
Prabhu, thanks, Prabhu. Prabhu, a slightly different angle I'm asking, Prabhu. What you are saying is more in terms of the modes being an obstacle is the perspective that you explain. But what I'm trying to ask, Prabhu, like if I have to employ my rajas to create something for
there
the bhakti practice itself.
For creation, you don't need rajas.
Okay.
Ideally, rajas and tamas cannot be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Only sattva can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Rajas and tamas should be given up. From rajogun, you get lust, material attachment. These are the byproducts of rajogun. They cannot be dovetailed in Krishna's service. They have to be given up. And similarly, lethargy, sleep, they cannot be dovetailed in Krishna's service. They have to be given up. Certain mode of goodness things are favorable for Krishna's service. They can be dovetailed. So when it is dovetailed in the mode of anukulyasya sankalpo, then it becomes a devotional act. Otherwise, whatever action that can be produced, that can be performed in Rajogun, can be better performed in Sattvaguna. So, okay. Action itself is not characterized by Rajoguna.
Okay.
Actually, action can be performed in Sattvaguna also.
Mm,
so,
okay.
therefore,
okay.
one should not say creation means rajoguna. No, creation can be performed in sattvaguna also. Generally, the because when rajas is present, because if you say like that, then by practice of bhakti, it is mentioned that the rajoguna and tamoguna gets subdued. He said that after that, a devotee stops creating anything. He said that Prabhupada traveled across the globe 7 times and he inspired people to construct 108 temples. He said that he had some tremendous rajogun to do all of those things. No. So action in itself does not necessarily need rajogun. The conditioned soul, when he acts, actually rajogun leads to action without much deliberation. But sattvaguna leads to action with deliberation. So sattvaguna is not against action. So similarly, to destroy something, you don't need rajogun. Mindless destruction is caused by rajogun. Whereas a person in sattvaguna can also dismantle things when he understands that, okay, this is not so favorable. With careful deliberation, he may also dismantle things. So dismantling in itself does not need rajoguna. Tamoguna. Therefore, one should not say that rajoguna is there, tamoguna is there, they can also be. It's often misunderstood that actually, you can dovetail your rajoguna, dovetail your tamoguna. Actually, they are not dovetailable.
Okay, got it, Prabhu. So, Prabhu, what I understand is, we have to, till we elevate to the action in sattva mode, we will be bound by the negative effects of the lower modes if we try to act in that modes.
Still our faith may be beyond the three
modes. Yes, Prabhu, that is. Thank you.
Right. Okay, anything else before we move forward to the third verse? Yes, Keshav Priyamati.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji General Singham. Surprisingly, I had the same doubt evening, Prabhuji, when I heard another lecture of yours, you're telling this. And thanks, Shivkumar Prabhu has brought up this question. Prabhuji, actually, Brahma, when Brahma creates his world, I generally understood that for creation, we need Rajoguna. So Brahma didn't create by Rajoguna, I said, Prabhuji. But what I understood is the pure devotees are devotees. Though they are not influenced by modes, they have a control over the modes, just like the Lord has a control over the modes. So just like that water is coming through a tap, we have a control over the tap, like it will not come just like that, and we can to the extent we want the water, we can control the tap. So like that those people, what you said is Prabhupada, he constructed so many temples around the world. So for any construction, we need that guna, but those people are having control over that. That's what I'm asking, Prabhu.
It's not like that. It's
so Brahma, like that. Prabhuji, like Brahma, how he created, did he
use it? It depends on which Brahma. The current Brahma is a pure devotee. For him, even though he is the controller of Rajogun, but he need not necessarily utilize Rajogun for creation. Creation can happen in sattvaguna also.
Creation can happen in the material world. Suppose I'm going to construct a temple, no, Prabhuji. I have to, like, materialistically, I have to handle so many things, no, Prabhuji.
That can be handled in sattvaguna. That can be handled in rajoguna. That can be handled in tamoguna. That is why there is, in Bhagavad Gita, there is description about austerity in the mode of goodness, austerity in the mode of passion, austerity in the mode of ignorance, and so many things, intelligence in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. So action in itself need not, it's not that action is exclusively attributed to rajoguna. Action can happen in sattvaguna.
When action happens, sattvaguna, they say they just be happy and like that.
That's a very simplistic understanding. That's a very simplistic understanding of Sattvaguna. There is
okay,
action
okay.
in Sattvaguna also. Action in Sattvaguna means you think and then act. Action in Rajoguna means you act and you may never think at all. That is Rajoguni action. And actually, in Rajoguna, if one keeps acting in Rajoguna, then he will construct lot of things, and eventually, because he will think after doing, many things he may wrongly do and he may have to pull it down and actually redo it. And actually, in Sattvaguna, they will think carefully, do it once and get it done. Rajoguni action means they will first very quickly do things, and after that they will think and realize that it was all wrong. So, action in
even to sleep
is not...
here, Prabhuji. Even to sleep here, we need a tamoguno. I mean, sleep here, sleep of devotees or people, elevated people. Is I have heard that even to sleep, you need tamoguno. How to understand that?
That's Prabhuji. Okay. That is okay. So, to sleep, of course, at night, naturally, one feels the influence of the time will always be there. So till we progress to a particular level, at night naturally we will feel sleepy. But that does not mean you are not consciously dovetailing in one sense. You are not consciously dovetailing tamoguna. You know, it is just like you feel sleepy, you have to take rest. So in order to wake up the next day and work. But that does not mean rajoguna. I am feeling very... greedy. So, because if you are going, if you have to dovetail greed, because greed itself is abstract, right? Rajoguna itself is abstract. So the influence of Rajoguna is manifested. You see Rajoguna through its influence. What is the influence of Rajoguna? Greed, lust, all for material things. How
anger.
Do you dovetail it in Krishna's service? Anger. How do you dovetail it in Krishna's service?
Okay, I have heard except envy, everything can be dovetailed in Krishna's service, Prabhuji. That's what I have heard.
That is a very
really
big
envious.
Misunderstanding. That's a very big misunderstanding.
That's what
neither,
I have heard, Prabhuji.
Nothing can be dovetailed. Neither lust can be dovetailed, nor envy can be dovetailed. And, none of it can be dovetailed. Your material attachment, how you will dovetail it in Krishna's service? Greed for money. How you will dovetail it for Krishna's service? Can you please tell? How do you dovetail
using
it?
Using it for Krishna's temple or something
then,
like that.
Then it is not greed. If you have greed for money, you will not use it for Krishna's service. Because you can't get one half of the... This is half-hen logic. Half-hen logic means I will not feed the hen. I will only get the golden egg. If you have greed for money, why would you, that greed will not allow you to donate it for temple also. If you have lust for the opposite sex, how will you dovetail it in Krishna's service? Can you tell? How do you dovetail it in Krishna's service?
Not possible.
If you have anger for your enemy, how do you dovetail it in Krishna's service?
Prabhuji, Prabhupada explains in NOA, Prabhuji, like anger, you can like you can dovetail it by you're getting angry for Krishna's devotees, anyone
okay.
blasts the devotee.
Okay. So, okay. I will explain it to you. Yeah. So anger. First to become now, let us say kamat krodho bijayate. Whatever you have attachment for, when that is taken away, you will feel angry. Okay. So, let's say you have lot of attachment for your money. Someone steals your money. So, you naturally become angry. So, you say, no anger. You please stop right now. When someone becomes envious towards a devotee, then I will utilize that anger. Will your anger wait till then?
No, probably.
So, first thing, if you have to become angry on a person who becomes, on a person who is inimical to a devotee, first thing, you should be attached to a devotee. If you are not attached to a devotee, if you are attached to your own money, then why would you become angry when someone misbehaves with a devotee? You will become angry only when someone misbehaves with your money. So, therefore, anger cannot be dovetailed like that. So, basically, that means that this is often what is quoted here is Kama Krishna Karmarpane Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane Lobha Sadhu Sange Harikata Moha Ishta Labha Vine, like that in one Narottam Das Thakur's bhajan in Prarthana, this verse comes that Niyukta Kariba Yata Tata. He says that I will engage these Kama Krodha Lobha Moha in the service of Krishna like that. So this sounds like dovetailing, but this is not dovetailing. Actually, what Narottam Das Thakur is indicating is that in Krishna consciousness, if you take up to Krishna consciousness and achieve perfection, at the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness, you will not be deprived of human emotions. When you get attached to Krishna, naturally there is all scope for emotional expression in Krishna consciousness. That's what it means. It's not like you will become like a living entity in Brahma Jyoti without any emotion. There will once you become a devotee, there will be ample scope for emotional expression. When you become spiritually attached to Krishna, there is scope for kama. Kama means what? Kama Krishna Karmarpani. So there will be great attachment to performing Krishna's service. Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane. Because by then you would develop so much attachment to Krishna and his devotees that anyone who misbehaves with them, you will naturally feel anger, and there is scope for expression of the emotion of anger also. Lobha Sadhu Sange Harikata. So lobha means greed. So now you have lot of greed for money. How do you dovetail that greed? Is it that, oh, I will not feel the greed for money. I will instead feel greedy for Sadhu Sangha and Harikatha. Does it happen like that? It doesn't happen. But when you become Krishna conscious, if you become attached to Krishna, naturally there is scope for expression of the emotion of greed also. But not greed which is born out of Rajoguna. This is a spiritual emotion. Spiritual emotion is not dovetailed emotion. By dovetailing material emotion, it does not automatically become spiritual. Spiritual emotion is of a different kind. So what actually Srila Narottam Das Thakur is indicating is that in your stage of spiritual perfection, there is ample scope for emotional expression. The perfected stage of devotional service is not devoid of emotions. It is rich with all kinds of emotions, with ample scope for emotional expression. That's what it means. That does not mean that you dovetail all your anarthas. Oh, lust is there, no problem, I can dovetail lust in Krishna's service.
That Prabhupada says this also in Udrupasta Vegam. He says you can marry and you can get rid of that Vega by giving birth to Krishna conscious child. He uses those analogies, no, Prabhuji.
Yeah, that is there. That is a sattvaguni way of doing things. That does not mean, that is not exactly dovetailing. See, there is scope for, you can say, it's not that if you have urges which are born out of Rajogun and Tamogun, it's not that you cannot practice devotional service. But we cannot think that I can dovetail them. Eventually, Rajoguna has to be given up. So, and that happens naturally by practice of Krishna consciousness. So that kind of dovetailing, so conscious dovetailing is possible only for Sattvaguna. Conscious dovetailing should not be done for Rajoguna and Tamoguna. That is not possible actually.
Even in devotion, Prabhuji, we see devotees of various types. Prabhuji, some people will be very contented with what is there, but some people will be very passionate. Some devotees will be very passionate. They will be extending their preaching process or building temple. They will be, so it is somewhat passion is there, no, Prabhuji? Like even
so what they should do, what they should do is they should consciously try to subdue their passion and not try to act passionately. Because when you keep
but that is giving devotional service, no, Prabhuji. Like,
no,
it is landing up in a good, no, big temple or something like that.
It will land up in big temple, but it will land that person in big trouble also.
Oh.
Because if he acts in passion, automatically with passion, lot of offenses will come.
Correct.
Automatically with passion, if you are fueling passion, when money comes, you can't have only one side of passion. The other side of passion will also come. You know, when you see money, then you will wish to use that money in your own, for your own purpose. And when you're fueling passion from one side, from another side, the other aspects of passion, greed, lust, everything will increase. You cannot say, no, only this side of passion I will use, that side of passion I will not use. You cannot.
Okay.
When passion manifests in one way, it will manifest in all the ways. So we can't keep fueling passion, thinking that how can that I am utilizing it for Krishna's service. Ultimately, we cannot fuel passion. To say that, if I have a very passionate nature, what can I do? Try to subdue it. That's what we should do. Try to subdue it. Don't fuel it. So when we fuel it, then it will raise in all directions. If passion increases, then automatically attraction to the opposite sex, attraction to money, everything will come. Because if mode of passion increases, all the symptoms of mode of passion will come also. So ideally, one should try to practice bhakti. Not that a person who has lot of mode of passion should not practice bhakti. Should try to diligently practice bhakti and try to sort of, as much as possible, subdue that mode of passion and not fuel it actually.
So subduing means, Prabhuji, we can just chant and we can follow the sadhanas, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
And not fueling it means what should be
not fueling it precaution. Means precaution means if I feel very passionate about things, let's say I have a lot of attraction for money. So if we engage in activities which fuel our passion in that direction, then automatically, or if I have a lot of passion, lot of attraction for the opposite sex, you know, how will you dovetail it? You know. Even if you get married, but the passion side will be there. And if on one side you are fueling that passion by aggressively doing a lot of things, then because of which, if the passion is increasing little by little, then it will manifest in other ways also. So therefore, ideally, even though there are ways of doing it, you know, anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjana. You know, therefore, in all kinds of aspects, you know, whether in doing things, we will have to do it in ways which is most anukul for our bhakti. And the most anukul for our bhakti is that which is more mode of passion. Sorry, mode of goodness, not the other two lower modes like that.
So any achievement, not achievements, anything constructively done in bhakti can be done in shadva itself, is it, Prabhuji?
Ideally, one should endeavor to do it in that way only.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Kalanidhi Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Prabhuji, arising out of whatever discussions we've been having now, I have a particular understanding I would like you to clarify. So, in my opinion, the guna is defined by the motive. So externally, the manifestation may appear like somebody is acting out of rajogun, and somebody else might be acting out of a transcendental consciousness. External, correct. Like we give the example of Arjuna and Duryodhan, etc. So ultimately, the three gunas are defined by the motive and not by how it manifests in action. Is it correct, Prabhu?
It's a black and white understanding. Okay. I will not, if you are talking about sadhakas, if you are comparing a sadhak, if you are comparing a conditioned soul and a siddha, then what you say is right. You know,
Prabhuji, let us take only the conditioned souls for the time being, not the devotees or anything.
Yeah. So if you are taking only conditioned souls as the example, then intent conditioned sadhaka, right?
Yeah. Conditioned person, that's all, not even a sadhaka. Why, Prabhuji, I will just explain this. My understanding is, tamogun means a person seeks instant gratification of his sensual desires without thinking whether something is right or wrong. Simply, he seeks immediate gratification and he's not ready to work for it. He's not ready to work and wait to get the result. So, I think that is tamogun. And rajogun means one has a goal to achieve, and he is willing to invest time, energy, resources on that, and he can wait to achieve that particular result. For that, he works passionately. A person in sattva guna is just finding happiness in the qualities that he has developed. These qualities in themselves make him happy. Maybe he is a research person, he is a teacher, he is a scientist, etc., etc. That the very activity is making him happy. He's not working towards a goal. This is how I understood the three gunas, Prabhu.
Yeah. Okay, to some extent, yes.
And transcendental means everything is absolutely, his consciousness is God, and he wants to achieve the transcendence. And whatever he does with that goal, something may appear to be sattvic, something may appear rajasic, something may appear tamasic, but no, they're all actually transcendental. Is it okay, Prabhu?
So, because you clarified that we are talking only about conditioned souls.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, conditioned sadhaka is one whom you say would have transcendental intent, right?
Yes.
So a conditioned sadhaka who may have a transcendental intent may still be in his actions, the stimulus for action need not come only from his intent. A stimulus for action can also come through his conditioned nature.
Then he must be experiencing an inner conflict, right?
Yeah, that conflict is always there, right? That's what Bhagavatam says.
So when conflict is... So, Prabhuji, can I say that if a conflict is there, then that person is probably in rajasic or tamasic consciousness. If there is no conflict, but he is acting like a rajasic person, then perhaps his swabhava is dovetailed with his shraddha.
No.
Like Prabhuji, we see Prabhupada is so actively working. He's fighting for Juhu temple. What an amazing display of rajogun from an outside point of view. For us, it looks like that, but it was not, we know. But to an outsider, it looks like that. He could wear down that Mr.
Yen. You said conditioned sadhaka, suddenly you are giving Prabhupada's example. So let us stick to conditioned sadhakas because there is a big difference. Because we say Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyehana Bhujai. Correct?
Yeah.
One cannot understand the Kriya, the actions.
Yes.
And Mudra, the intentions of a devotee.
This verse
talks about which Vaishnava?
This is about pure devotee.
Pure means what?
Pure means not no more conditioning. He's
perfect and devotee. But when it comes to when it comes to pure devotees, we are not supposed to judge them because we cannot judge them. We simply don't have the tools to judge them, because their actions is stimulated not by the three modes, and we are just used to material stimulus. Right?
Yeah.
But when it comes to conditioned sadhakas, the principle that is applied is drishtai swabhava janitai vapushascha doshe na prakritattva miha bhakta janasya pashye. That is the principle that we apply. So, which means, oh, this is his conditioning, this is not the person. Okay. So the source of non-judgmentalism towards a sadhaka is that you learn to separate his faith from his conditioning. His faith is different, his conditioning is different. Yes, he is acting greedily, he is acting lustily. That stimulus is not coming from his faith, that stimulus is coming from his conditioning, which is rajoguni. So, now one may start out an activity with an intent, which may be transcendental, but in executing it, definitely there may be influence of his conditioned nature. He may do it in a very pushy way, and in doing that, he may get some money which he might wish to sort of utilize some for his own purpose. That may be due to the influence of rajogun.
But Prabhuji, will he be aware that he is deviating or no? A devotee, a conditioned sadhaka who is acting under rajogun, he has a transcendental faith, but his actual behavior is rajasic. Will he not feel an inner conflict that, no, I am deviating from what I have learned and it is not taking me towards my goal?
Yeah. It will be, there will be an inner conflict to the extent his consciousness is evolved. He will feel that conflict, but only he knows.
Yeah, okay.
Only he knows. Whether he is having a conflict or not, we will not be able to tell.
We can't tell that.
Yeah.
So he may be, to the extent that the Shraddha is strong, his consciousness is more evolved. Can we say like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Or to the extent the Shraddha is strong, to that extent he will feel the conflict.
He'll feel the conflict and he'll be able to subdue also.
He may be, may not be, depending on the strength of the conditioning. You may have a person who has a very strong faith, very strong conditioning also.
You may have
a person who has a weak faith, but he may have a weak conditioning also.
So, do these things exist in a vacuum? They don't influence each other?
Well, these are two separate stimulus. Both of them may influence the action of a person. Depending on the strength of each of these stimulus, he may sometimes, when the stimulus of faith is strong, he may be able to subdue the conditioning. Sometimes when the stimulus from the conditioning is strong, he may get carried away and he may succumb to the urges. So do they influence each other? No, but they can influence the person. These two are two different forces, but the experiencer of these force, of these two forces, is the sadhaka. So they may influence the sadhaka.
So what happens to the Shraddha itself? If he has a very strong conditioning, is it not likely to weaken his Shraddha, or the Shraddha will maintain its potency?
Shraddha generally gets weakened when the when due to association, which can weaken that Shraddha. So like wrong association. So otherwise if you are influenced by a strong conditioning, it will not necessarily weaken your Shraddha, but it will strengthen your conditioning more.
So, Prabhuji, that's the question I have. Bhakti Shukriti enhances one's faith. It gives him faith. So, Dushkriti, does it weaken the faith or no? Whatever strength the Shraddha has acquired, it cannot be weakened by any force. Can we say like that?
Offenses will weaken the faith.
Weaken or hide them, Prabhuji? Mask them? It will weaken only.
Yeah. Weaken means what? It will, one will start losing the spiritual potency.
It won't be accessible to him anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Yeah. I have a question also about this dovetailing. But I just need to first follow up on this discussion with Kalanidhi Prabhu. It sounded like, anyway, mode of goodness, for somebody to claim to be in the mode of goodness when pursuing their desires, they have to follow scriptures in their pursuit of their desires. Otherwise, it's not mode of goodness. Isn't that correct or not?
Well, yeah, so I mean, here we have to understand mode of goodness. There are many aspects of mode of goodness. That's why, if you remember, in one of our previous classes, we discussed how do the modes act, what do they affect. Mode of goodness can affect scriptural faith can be affected by the mode of goodness, by the three modes. One's conditioned nature can be affected by the three modes. Or one's, for now, to keep it simple, these two things can be affected by three modes. And the three modes, when they affect either the faith or the scriptural faith, or the conditioned nature, it has a different effect. So when it affects the conditioned nature, it creates specific likes and dislikes. But when it affects the faith, it creates an understanding of what is right and what is wrong. So like that. So if our conditioning is affected by the three modes, let's say even mode of goodness, if our conditioning, so then it need not necessarily push that person to accept scriptures. That is not necessary. That comes from, because when you are saying accepting scriptures, it means accepting a particular value system. That acceptance of value system comes from faith. So if one's faith is transcendental, then he will be inspired to accept the Bhakti Shastras, pure devotional literatures. So if one's faith is influenced by mode of goodness, then he may accept those Shastras which may promote liberation. If his faith is influenced by if his scriptural faith is influenced by mode of passion, then he may be inspired to accept those scriptures which promote some material enjoyment through following scriptures. Similarly, if one's scriptural faith is influenced by mode of ignorance, he may be inspired to accept those scriptures, the black tantric scriptures, through which one may cause harm to others, like that. So attachment to scriptures in itself need not come from mode of goodness. Actually, mode of goodness may push a person to accept mode of goodness Shastras. Mode of passion may push a person to accept mode of passion Shastras, like that.
Okay.
And a transcendental faith may inspire one to accept the transcendental Shastras, which is pure devotional scriptures.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe I misread something in chapter 17, which I know we haven't gotten there yet, but I thought chapter 17 was indicating that those in the mode of goodness accept Shastra.
Not for their... it's not that simplistic. No.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. Anyway, you know, back to my original question. My original question is actually in trying to get clarification about this dovetailing issue. So a person who is very enthusiastic about one or more of the nine limbs of devotional service, right? They may be so enthusiastic. And so it might appear that they are in the mode of passion. You know, let's say they love to discuss Krishna Katha, or they love deity dressing, or visiting temple, whatever it is. They're very enthusiastic about it. So much so that it might take up, you know, a major part of their day. So how can you distinguish between whether that person is in the mode of, you know, has a rajasic, you know, mood when it comes to that particular limb or limbs, or whether it's just eagerness, or whether it's mode of goodness or goodness, you know, like, because since it's a limb of devotional service, you know, a person might think that, you know,
I will share, but this thing should be used for self-assessment only.
Mm.
Because that's what is healthy for our spiritual life. And give the benefit of doubt to the other person. That's the safest thing to do. When we see in others, oh, that must be enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I don't wish to explore any further. You know, that better, that is a good practice. But how do we identify it in ourselves?
Yes.
Whether I'm acting in enthusiasm or in mode of passion. So then for that, we can look into the 14th chapter, 17th chapter, which talks about these other symptoms of mode of passion. You know.
Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhu. I also meant to include how you distinguish that from even transcendental, you know, because it is devotional service. How would we even distinguish it from that, transcendental goodness?
Oh, let's not get into transcendental goodness now, because that is seen in perfected devotees like Srila Prabhupada or other very exalted devotees.
Okay, so transcendental goodness would never apply to sadhakas?
Not yet, yeah. As long as they are sadhakas, no. Not
okay.
Yet. Yeah.
Oh.
Only their faith is transcendental. Their faith is transcendental.
Yes.
Here we are talking about their condition. So when you see enthusiasm in yourself, how do you know whether it is genuine enthusiasm or whether it is mode of goodness? So we can see for the other symptoms of mode of goodness or whether it is mode of passion or whether it is
passion
genuine
or goodness.
Yeah.
Passion, so passion, mode of goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. There are other symptoms of mode of passion or goodness that are mentioned. We can tally with that, you know, if we are feeling greedy, you know, if our attraction for the opposite sex and there is the level of satisfaction is, you know, very compromised. You know, these are some symptoms of mode of passion. So we can also check with
You said another symptom is if our satisfaction is compromised. What does that mean?
Which means even after engagement, I feel like not so satisfied, because in goodness, one feels a sense of satisfaction. And a sense of joy. But in passion, there is always a sense of lack of satisfaction. And which is also accompanied by some greed, some name for from, you know, we enjoy glorification. We may seek name, fame, glorification, position, etc. So these are all symptoms of we may like we may like you know, chanting the holy names, but if someone glorifies us, if we like that also, that probably to some extent indicates passion. And if when no one is there to glorify, or we may like deity dressing and we may wish that people appreciate my dressing, those are some symptoms of mode of passion. That might be a little bit of mode of passion, but that may not be our only stimulus to dress the deities. But that could be a predominant stimulus, or that could be a secondary stimulus. So these are things which we can ask ourselves.
Okay. So basically, what we should ask ourselves is, you know, is my motive at least partially mixed? You know, it's not just that I like doing that limb of devotional service, but maybe I want some recognition for it. Or how satisfied am I from doing that service?
Yeah.
So, you know, and if it's motive goodness, then those things won't be there. You'll enjoy doing it just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay, there are still some more questions. Okay. Thinking the mode of passion can be dovetailed leads to expectation of result. Yeah, that's true. How can I use the results for my benefit? Yeah, that's right. Okay. Vaikuntha is made of pure sattva, but that sattva is not material sattva. That is, you know, Vishuddha sattva. That is nothing to do with material goodness. Okay. There is another question. What are some other parameters besides deliberate action to see if the way we perform our services is in mode of goodness or not? For example, will there be no anger, no pushiness in service in mode of goodness? Yeah. So these are things, you know, we try to step over others. You know, we very actively feel that people should appreciate us. You know, these are all symptoms of passion, actually. Okay, anyways, let's move on. At least let's try to complete at least one verse today. Okay. So I think it's time. Already 1 hour, 5 minutes, we have just discussed some question answers. Let's start today's discussion finally. Krishna says next. He says, ashraddadana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apraapyamam nivartante vrityu samsara vartmani. O parantapa, O afflicter of enemies, O Arjuna, asya dharmasya ashraddadanaha purusha. Ashraddadana purusha, those who do not have faith, asya dharmasya, in this path of bhakti, mam aprapya, they do not attain me. Mrityu samsara vartmani nivartante. Nivartante, they remain fixed on the path, vartmani, of transmigration and death. Mrityu samsara. Those who do not have faith in this path, they cannot attain me. So they will remain on this path of transmigration and death. So those who do not have faith in the path of bhakti, they cannot attain me. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatpatha tato mam tatpato gyatva vishate tadanantaram. So only one who has faith in this path of bhakti, they can attain me. Otherwise, they will have to remain in this path of transmigration and death. So now one may ask, well, if this dharma is so easy to execute, who will remain in this world? Because if bhakti is the easiest process, then no one will remain in this world. Everyone will accept this process. And if anyone accepts this process, they will go to Krishna. Then no one will remain in this material world, right? This verse says, answers. Using genitive instead of locative case in the phrase dharmasya says poetic license. Okay, this is some grammar. Those who do not have faith in this process of dharma, who think that the supreme position given to bhakti in the scriptures is just exaggeration, and who do not accept it with faith, they do not attain me, even though they make efforts to attain me by other methods. So it is, we think that, oh, it is very easy. But even in the material world, people do not always accept the easy methods because they have a liking for different other things. So just because bhakti is easy does not mean everyone will accept, because they may not have faith in bhakti, even though it may be very easy. Right? So these are things which are very, faith is very subjective. So the very fact that, oh, this is the easiest process, does not mean everyone will choose it. If they have faith in it, they will choose it. And they will have faith in it only if they have had the fortune of coming in touch with devotees and having favorable experiences in the association of devotees. And then if they accumulate the Agyata Sukriti, only then it is possible that they will develop faith. Otherwise, they will not have faith. Okay. So those who do not have faith in this process of dharma, who think that, oh, this bhakti is glorified and all that, how can such a easy process be so glorious? You know, it is not possible. This must be just an exaggeration. Many people may think like that. Okay. So therefore, faith is a prerequisite. Just like faith is a prerequisite for any other thing also. They remain completely on the path of transmigration provided by breath. Nivartate is equal to nitaram vartate. Nitaram means eternal. Vartate means they remain. So nitaram vartate means they eternally remain. They eternally remain. They complete, they eternally remain on the path of transmigration pervaded by truth. Now, eternal here refers to till they embrace the path of bhakti, till they develop faith in the path of bhakti, till then they will remain. Otherwise, whenever our scripture talks about eternally they will suffer, that eternal suffering means till they mend their ways. That's what it means. Krishna says that Tanaham dushatak kruran samsareshu naradaman kshipami ajasrama shubhan asurishveva yonishu. So Krishna says that these people, those who hate me, the lowest of mankind, I eternally cast them in the demoniac species. I mean, eternally means what? Eternally means as long as they don't mend their ways. But once they mend their ways, Krishna will not cast them in that way. That is the way in which eternal has to be understood. Like, for example, if you are in Chaupati temple, okay, and if you come out of the gate of Chaupati temple, you turn right, you go to Babulnath temple. You turn left, you go to Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan. Right? On the same road. So now, if someone wants to go to Babulnath temple, he goes out of the gate and turns left. So what you will say, you will never reach Babulnath temple. So you will never reach means what? If you keep walking on, if you turn left and keep walking, you will never reach Babulnath temple. What if I take an about turn and start walking in the opposite direction? You will definitely reach Babulnath temple. So when in our scriptures, when Krishna seems to indicate eternally I will cast them in demoniac species, it should be understood to indicate that as long as they don't mend their ways, they will be cast in demoniac species. Otherwise, this is not that kind of an eternal damnation. You know, that is not what he's talking about. Like that, he says. So, ashraddhadana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa. So, even though the process is so extraordinary, raja vidya, raja gushyam, pavitram idam uttamam, pratyakshavagamam, dharmyam, susukam kartum, avyayam. But still, if one does not have faith on this process, then they cannot attain Krishna by this process. They will have to remain in this world of birth and death. Then he said that I will there is a question in the chat box. What does Ashraddha mean? Like once it is mentioned that His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj asked one priest of a church that he is speaking so nicely from the Bible. But then the priest said, oh, I just preach, but I don't believe in it. You know, like that. Yeah. So they don't have faith, you know. So Ashraddha means that, you know, having no faith. So if one does not have faith, then it does not work. So faith is a prerequisite. Of course, faith is a prerequisite for every single thing. Okay. So then, because Krishna said, idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasoyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yadgyatva mokshashe asubhat. So he says, I will speak knowledge about me. Okay. And by practicing which you can attain me. So, knowledge of bhakti starts with sambandha jnana. Sambandha abhideya prayojan. Sambandha means understanding Krishna, understanding jiva, understanding material nature, and how these three are connected, the relationship between the three of them. That is sambandha jnana. So first he is going to speak about Krishna's Aishwarya. Okay, there is another question in the chat box. In this process of dharma, is this referring to bhakti as pure devotion? Yes, bhakti as pure devotion. Or even mixed devotion also. The element of bhakti. It can talk about pure bhakti or it can even refer to element of bhakti. At least one should accept the element of bhakti. Because if element of bhakti is accepted, then in the practice of Jnana Yoga, by practice of Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, one can still escape the material world and go to Brahma Jyoti. That is there. So which means at least the element of bhakti should be accepted. The form of Krishna has to be accepted to be real, transcendental, worshipable. One should wholeheartedly worship that form. All of that should be accepted. That is part of accepting bhakti. Like that. Okay. So now, so sambandha jnana about Krishna means first to understand his Aishwarya. And Krishna has a lot of powers, but the most preliminary power of Krishna is the power of creation, maintenance, and destruction of this material universe. How Krishna
interacts with the material energy in creating maintenance, in creating, maintaining and destroying this material universe. That is the most foundational knowledge. So one starts with that. And Bhagavad Gita also, talking about Krishna, knowledge about Krishna, it starts with this foundational knowledge. So Krishna says,
Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutani nachaham teshva vastitaha. Maya, by me, tatam, pervaded. Idam sarvam jagat, this whole universe. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat. I pervade this whole universe. Avyakta murtina. By my form, which is invisible to material senses, since I am the cause. I pervade this whole universe by my form, which is invisible to the material senses. Avyakta murtina. Murtina means form. Avyakta means that which is invisible. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat. I pervade this whole universe in a form which is invisible to this universe, since I am the cause. Matstani sarva bhutani. All entities are situated in me, since I am their cause. All living entities are situated on me, which means, just like we are situated on earth, earth is our shelter. Similarly, when Krishna says all living entities are situated on me, it means he is their shelter, which means he is their cause. Nacha aham teshu avastitaha. But I am not in them, since I am completely detached. We are dependent on earth. If earth is not there, we cannot stand. But if we are not there, earth can very well exist. Probably if human beings are not there, earth will actually be much more prosperous and nice. So therefore, he says, Maya tatam idam sarvam. I pervade this whole universe, avyakta murtina, by my form which is invisible to the material senses, since I am their cause. Matstani sarva bhutani. All entities are situated in me, since I am their cause. Nacha aham teshu avastitaha. But I am not in them. Why? Because I am completely detached. I am not dependent on them. They all are dependent on me. Just like the earth supports people. When earth is not there, people cannot, they don't have a shelter. But when people are not there, earth can exist. You know, earth is detached from people. So, Srila Vishnu Chakradakur says, in 7 verses, the Lord speaks of the knowledge of the powers of God required by devotees who are situated in Dasya Bhakti. So you may say, oh, I am not in Dasya Bhakti, I am aspiring for Madhurya Bhakti. But even in Madhurya, there is a basic Dasya that is there. So if it is needed for Dasya Bhakti, then it is needed for all the other higher forms of Bhakti also. Right? Because Madhurya has Madhurya, Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya and Shanta. And Vatsalya has Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya, Shanta. Sakya has Sakya, Dasya, Shanta. And Dasya has Dasya, Shanta. Like that. So, this whole universe is pervaded by me, whose form is invisible to the senses, since I am the cause of the universe. I am in the universe. So, like that. And as well, all the living entities, moving and non-moving, are situated in me, a form of pure consciousness, since I am their cause. So the whole universe is in me.
Matstani Sarva Bhutani. But I am not situated in all these living entities. As clay is present in its product, a pot, because I am completely independent of everything. I am not situated in all these things as clay is present in its product, a pot, because I am completely independent of everything. So, here he says, this is Achintya Bheda Bheda. This is Achintya Bheda Bheda. Let us take an example of a pot. Okay. So a pot is there. A pot has three causes. Okay. A pot needs clay. Clay is called the material cause of this. Clay is called the material cause of pot. Okay. Because clay in itself transforms into pot. Okay. Then there is the potter. The potter is called the Nimitta Karan. Nimitta Karan means the material cause, the effective cause of the pot. Because the potter has to shape the clay, bake it, and do all those things. Clay in itself will not automatically become pot. You need a potter. But even potter is not sufficient. You need a potter's wheel and a stick. You know, using the stick, he will turn the potter's wheel, and then using his hands, he will shape that pot, and then using fire, he will bake that pot, and then it will become a usable pot, right? So, clay is the material cause. It is called as upadana karan. Okay. And then the potter himself is the nimitta karan, the effective cause of the pot. And his hands, the potter's wheel, the stick, fire, etc., they are called as sahakari. Sahakari karan, instrumental cause. Like that. So, here Krishna says, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. I pervade this whole universe by being the cause, because of being the cause of it. But he says, matstani sarva bhutani. All things are situated in me because I am the cause. But nacha aham teshu avasthitaha. But I am not situated in them. Meaning, just like, you know, clay is situated in the pot. You know, if pot is there, clay is also there in it. But when Krishna says, I pervade, that does not mean that, this universe, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, at least if you consider the gross part of it, it's not that earth is a part of Krishna's Swarupa, water is a part of Krishna's Swarupa, fire is a part of Krishna's Swarupa. These are not part of Krishna's Swarupa. This is just Krishna's external energy. That is the meaning of Nachaham Teshu Avastitaha. I am detached. I am detached. So even though Krishna is pervading through all of this, at least in the form of his Paramatma, but that does not mean earth, water, fire, air, ether, every single thing is Krishna's Swarupa. It is not his own form. And it also indicates that he is detached from it. So, Krishna is completely independent of this material universe. Krishna is completely independent of this material universe. In the sense, he is not personally involved in it at all. It is all deputed to his external energy, not even internal energy. Like that. That is the meaning. Matstani sarva bhutani najaham teshu avasthitaha. The whole universe is pervaded by me, whose form is invisible to the senses, since I am the cause of the universe. And as well, all the living entities, moving and non-moving, are situated in me, a form of pure consciousness, since I am their cause. But I am not situated in all these entities. I do not pervade them as clay is present. As clay is present in its product part, because I am completely independent of everything. Like that. So, he is pervading everything as Paramatma in one sense. Okay. But at the same time, earth and that Paramatma cannot be seen. Avyakta Murtina. But one should not also think that I am present in all of them means earth, water, fire, air, ether, all these kinds of material elements, they constitute the body of the Supreme Lord. No. So neither do material elements constitute the body of the Supreme Lord, nor is the Supreme Lord emotionally attached to these things. A potter, in one sense, is emotionally attached to the pot that he makes, because that is his means of livelihood. Whereas even though Krishna creates this universe, he is not personally attached to it. That also is indicated by the phrase nacha aham teshu avasthitaha, but I am not in them, since I am completely detached. Like that. Okay. We have 2 more minutes. Any quick discussion points, questions before we wind up for the day? Okay. So if there is none, we will pause here and continue this discussion next Friday. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.